Chapter 3. Sini rose early the next day without the help of Jonto, whom she found lurking suspiciously outside her bedroom after she had gotten dressed. She wore her red apprentice's apron over a beige blouse and navy skirt, and had pinned her hair into a bun at the nape of her neck, where the uniform top hat wouldn't disturb it. She had enough time to prepare two fried egg sandwiches and Fluff Fennel's bed before the buggy pulled up to the house, the driver casting a wary glance at the illusion of a dark mansion with broken shutters and sharp-eyed crows. He must have been new. Emery didn't appear until the buggy honked. He looked somewhat bleary-eyed.
"You really should go to sleep earlier,"
Sini commented as he locked the house.
"Why did you stay up?"
"Just thinking," he said, stifling a yawn.
"About what?"
He glanced at her, paused, and smiled.
"As I said, I can't give away all my secrets."
Sini rolled her eyes and hurried to the car. "I think there's a good many hours in the daytime for thinking." Emery merely smiled a second time and helped her into the cab. Once they were comfortably seated, Sini handed him his sandwich. The man really would have starved by now had Magician Avioski not appointed Sini to his stewardship. She told him so as he chewed his first bite.
"A great many things would have been different without you, that is certain," he replied.
Sini mulled over his words for some hidden meaning, but deciphered none. Perhaps she really wasn't as astute as she should be. She wondered if there was a spell for that. It took the buggy 2 hours and Sini and Emery 11 conversation topics, ranging from Sini's father's new job as a facilities worker for the local water treatment plant to the mating habits of honeybees, to arrive in Dartford. Sini had never before been to Dartford. She glanced out the window as they approached, soaking in the sight of the large, industrial-looking city. Narrow, cramped-looking homes and flats occupied both sides of nearly every street, and various factories, warehouses, and sparse trees lined the city's perimeter. Dartford also had a very wide river with a port. Leaning forward, Sini closed her eyes and held her breath as the buggy drove over a long, suspended bridge, trying to block out all thoughts about the miles and miles of water beneath her. Emery placed a hand on her back for comfort, which he did not remove even after the buggy found solid land. Sini made no comment, letting herself enjoy the subtle warmth of his fingers. The driver pulled into a wide square paved with cobblestones, parking in a free spot amid a long line of automobiles and one unhitched carriage. When Sini stepped out and looked for the paper mill, she saw only more flats, a butcher shop, a bookshop, a polymaking, plastics, studio, and some sort of foreign foods grocery store, all more squat and less colorful than similar buildings in the capital. Only the bank building reached more than one story high. A breeze swept by, and the hairs on the back of her neck stood on end. She turned around and scanned the narrow street behind her, but saw only businessmen on their way to work and a small flock of flying mailbirds, enchanted by some other folder in a nearby city. Odd. For a moment, Sini had experienced the distinct sensation of being watched.
"Where's the mill?"
Sini asked after Emery paid the driver and began walking toward the square.
"It's on the east side," he answered.
He jutted his chin forward toward a short, faded red bus parked in the square.
"The shuttle will take you there."
Sini paused.
"Just me?"
Emery smiled, and Sini spied mischief in his green eyes.
"It's a rather dreadful tour, and the place doesn't smell too pleasant either. I'm going to pass on this one."
Sini frowned.
"You make it sound so exciting."
"Can't I just read a book about it and skip?"
"Sini, Sini," he said.
"You do not yet know the marvels that wood chips and pulp have in store for you.
There will be a test. This visit is a requirement of the Board of Education for folders. Elective credit for anyone else. As I told you, Magician Avioski specifically requested your presence." Cassini pulled her top hat down farther on her head. There's a special place in heaven for people like you. Emery laughed and clapped a hand on her shoulder.
Cassini!
Sang out a familiar voice. Cassini looked toward the shuttle and spied Delilah, magician Aviaski's apprentice, hurrying toward her. Emery quickly withdrew his hand from Cassini's shoulder and stepped aside as the women greeted each other. Delilah grabbed Cassini by the arms and kissed both her cheeks, French bisou, as she was wont to do. She was the perfect opposite of her buttoned-up mentor. While magician Aviaski had a rather uptight and proper demeanor, Delilah bubbled inside and out and wore a smile that refused to ever leave her perfectly oval face. She had curled her sunny blonde hair, cut into a bob, and wore a sky blue sundress beneath her apprentice's apron. Cassini wasn't tall, but Delilah stood a good 2 inches shorter.
What are you doing here?
Cassini asked, watching from the corner of her eye as magician Aviaski approached Emery.
You're studying glass. Magician Aviaski says it's proper to be well-versed in all the materials, Delilah said with a slight French lilt, her voice reminiscent of chiming bells. She said you'd be coming. You don't mind, do you?
Cassini laughed.
Why would I mind?
But it doesn't look like it will be a very big group. Indeed, other than magicians Aviaski and Thane and the bus driver, only 3 other apprentices, all male, had gathered by the bus, each wearing a long red vest instead of an apron. Cassini recognized 2 of them from her graduating class. George, a stocky man whose rimless glasses were propped on a short nose, and Dover, whose curly dark hair and tan skin had always won him the attention of Cassini's female classmates in school. Cassini suspected their attention was why it had taken Dover the full 3 years to receive his diploma from Tagus Praff. Delilah took Cassini by the hand and pulled her over to the bus. She greeted all 3 boys and introduced Cassini to the one that she hadn't previously met. He was a tall, lanky fellow who reminded Cassini of Pritt from Emery's high school, the aspiring folder whom Emery had bullied, except that he was a pyre, a fire magician. Delilah practically cooed Dover's name, but he didn't seem to mind. It surprised Cassini to learn that, like herself, both Dover and George had been assigned to paper, and George had obviously not come to terms with that fact.
What a waste of time,
he grumbled, leaning back against the bus and folding his arms loosely over his chest.
Maybe if we all hold hands and stay quiet, someone will give us lollipops at the end of this nonsense.
A sour one for you, Cassini quipped, then flushed upon hearing her own words. She had been spending far too much time around Emery. George's ensuing scowl only punctuated that thought, though Dover turned away to hide a chuckle.
It will be splendid, Delilah said, hanging off Cassini's right arm, and great exercise besides. I've always wondered how paper is made.
Deforestation, George replied.
Dover laughed, his perfect curls quivering with the effort. Clemson, the pyre, merely scratched the back of his head. Magician Aviaski clapped her hands and said,
Everyone into the shuttle, we are sending you without chaperone because you are adults. Please remember that during your tour. The shuttle will meet you at the south entrance to the mill at noon. Don't be tardy. Your participation in this event will be recorded for your permanent record.
George cursed under his breath. Cassini met Emery's eyes and shrugged, then allowed Delilah to lead her onto the bus. To Cassini's dismay, the Dartford paper mill really did smell awful. Something like overcooked broccoli with a touch of morning breath. 3 buildings, squished together, comprised the factory itself. 7 stories tall, they were built to look like an even mix between a dormitory and a prison. The first 6 floors were striped with rows of evenly spaced rectangular windows, and the 1st and 3rd buildings boasted a huge smokestack each, which billowed white, broccoli-scented steam into the air, making it feel especially humid.
Part of the large river Sini had ridden across earlier flowed behind the factory, turning various wheels and powering generators. Their small tour group gathered together by the side of the shuttle. For the second time that day, Sini felt as though someone were watching her. Gooseflesh sprang up on her arms, but none of the other apprentices seemed to notice. Their attention was focused on the mill. Perhaps being in a new city had heightened her paranoia.
"I think it could look quite nice with some curtains,"
Delilah suggested. "And some perfume," Sini added. Still, she imagined that all the paper she had folded these last 3 months must have come from this mill, so that meant something. Without this factory, she would be out of a job. A tall woman in a purple jacket and an alarmingly short skirt that barely covered her knees appeared from inside the first building just as the shuttle drove off. Her dark hair was pulled back into a tight bun, and her eyelids were lined perfectly with kohl. She cradled a clipboard in the nook of her left elbow.
"Hello, hello,"
she said, counting each head with a bob of her finger. She took dainty steps around the pebble-strewn road.
"Seems we're missing a few. Will they be on their way?"
Sini glanced around her. "I think this is it."
"Oh, well, all right. Still a decent group,"
the woman nodded.
"My name is Miss Johnston, and I'll be your tour guide today. Please stay together as a group and don't touch anything unless instructed to do so. If we can do this, the tour will move along swiftly."
George mumbled something under his breath, but Sini didn't catch it. Likely for the best. She found herself disliking the man just a little bit more every time he opened his mouth. Miss Johnston scribbled something onto her clipboard.
"This way, follow me,"
she said as she led them into the first building, over a path of old stonework that had been repaired several times over with mismatching mortar. The single door into the factory was tucked under a faded brick arch, and Miss Johnston continued to chatter as the apprentices entered the building single file.
"Sir John Spillman built the first paper mill in Dartford in 1588. The Dartford Paper Mill was initially founded and built by the London Paper Mills Company in 1862, after excise duty on paper was abolished. Then it was restructured in 1889. The paper mill helped industrialize Dartford, which was traditionally a hub for chalk mining, lime burning, the wool industry, and other forms of agriculture."
Delilah leaned close to Sini and asked, "What's lime burning?" Sini shrugged. They walked into a large reception foyer with green and gray floor tiling and very sparse furniture. A great many potted plants, ranging from petunias to great leafy ferns, occupied every corner and cranny. Sini spied no electric wires. All the light emanated from the tall, age-stained windows over the door. To her surprise, the broccoli smell diminished somewhat in this foyer. That or Sini's nose had grown accustomed to it. A secretary behind a high beige desk glanced up at the group as it entered, but the apprentices didn't hold her interest for long.
"Back here are the meeting rooms for our employees,"
Ms. Johnston said, walking backward and gesturing to two unpainted doors on the far side of the room, half hidden by a wild-looking fern.
"As you follow me into this hallway, you'll hear the water race beneath your feet. The mill pumps water from the river through a half dozen smelted turbines beneath the factory, which power our newest machines, all of which are made right here in England. The Dartford Paper Mill prides itself on keeping all its affairs native."
As the tour continued, each ensuing room required more explanation than the last on how the different machines worked, what each employee did, and the history behind anything and everything in view. They walked through the large collection room that made up the entire back half of the first building, where logs that had been carried in by boat were ground in a wood chipper before being sent to the pulp room. Though Miss Johnston kept the tour group far away from the chipping itself, Cini still had to cover her ears. She couldn't hear Miss Johnston's endless lecture on the workings of the mill until they reached the pulp room, where the smell of broccoli and unbrushed teeth grew so strong, Cini would have gagged had Delilah not handed her a spare handkerchief to cover her nose with. Unfortunately, most of the interesting parts of the mill, such as the forming and pressing sections, lingered far behind the yellow paint lines on the floor that dictated where tour groups were allowed to walk. Rows of boxes and half-empty shelves blocked the machinery, which Cini would actually have enjoyed seeing. Miss Johnston led them through the machine room, of which Cini saw only a corner. The warehouse, which stood nearly the size of the wood-chipping room, but with more shelves and less light. And a room called the Dynamo and Engine, which produced so much of that bitter paper smell that Cini's eyes watered. Miss Johnston had just begun discussing the agitators and stuff chests when another employee, a young man in a smock, approached her from the left and whispered in her ear. Cini stepped forward and strained to listen, but all she heard was, "just now," and "suspicious." Still, the latter word piqued her interest. The man left, and Cini raised her hand to ask after him, but Miss Johnston waved the question away and said,
"I apologize for the inconvenience, but it seems we're experiencing some technical difficulties, which means this tour group will need to evacuate. If you'll follow me back through the warehouse, I'll have you exit out the west door. Hopefully this won't take long, and we can continue your tour. Again, my apologies."
George smacked his palm against his forehead, but the group followed Miss Johnston in silence back through the warehouse, which, of course, bore yellow tourist lines clear to the rusted, windowless door. Cini grabbed Delilah's wrist and pulled her toward the back of the group.
"Did you hear what he said?" she whispered.
Delilah shook her head, tickling Cini's nose with her curls.
"I didn't. You?"
"Something suspicious. I mean, he said suspicious. And something about just now. What could go wrong in a paper mill that would cause them to stop the tour? Bad pulp?"
Delilah shrugged. "Big businesses always have certain protocols for things like tour groups and emergency preparation. My pa works for Stanton Automobile, and there are all sorts of weird rules about what to do when something goes wrong. It usually just results in a lot of overtime."
Cini cringed at the idea of working overtime in a paper mill, but said nothing more on the subject. Miss Johnston left the group outside on a stretch of trampled grass not far from the river and disappeared back through the door. Clemson tested the handle, but found it locked.
"Curious," he said.
It was the first word Cini had heard him speak. The lanky man released the handle and said nothing more. Letting out a sigh, Cini took in her surroundings. She could hear the river churning at the back of the mill, and a gravel road wound around the side of the building to its front. A little farther out grew clusters of aspen trees and uncut crabgrass. She headed toward them with Delilah, the afternoon sun peeking out from behind wispy clouds. The others followed at a slow pace, George grumbling as he went.
"I think we should do lunch sometime soon, Cini," Delilah said with a grin.
She handled inconvenience so well. Cini envied that about her.
"I agree," Cini said, "but it's on your schedule. Magician Thane is fairly lenient about my time off."
"Oh, I think tomorrow would suit just right," Delilah said, clapping her hands together. "Magician Avioski has a full day booked at the school, what with the new year starting soon, so I'll only have personal study to complete. Where shall we go?"
Cini paused under a tree some 50 feet from the paper mill and leaned against its white, scarred trunk.
"Do you like fish? St. Albans Salmon Bistro at Parliament Square has really good bisque. I've tried to copy it before, but I can never get it right."
"Oh, I love St. Albans,"
Delilah said with a wave of her hand.
The bread is heavenly. Tomorrow at noon, then. I can meet you outside the statue of...
Delilah's lips kept moving, but a loud boom from behind her completely enveloped her words. Sini felt the explosion through the ground, up her legs, and in her very heart. The leaves overhead rattled, and two starlings took to the sky. Then Sini saw the fire. Flames soared upward from the first and second buildings of the paper mill, like an erupting volcano, spitting chunks of debris and ash higher than the smokestack's steam. They engulfed half the building. The heat hit in a wall-like wave a moment later, pulling beads of sweat from her skin.
Run!
She shouted, barely able to hear her own voice. She grabbed Delilah and pulled her in the opposite direction of the mill. Clemson was nowhere in sight, but George and Dover had already taken off, and she raced after them. A piece of debris slammed into a tree not 10 feet to her left, splitting it in two. Something whistled, and a second, smaller explosion sang through the air. Sienny turned just in time to see a massive chunk of factory wall hurtling toward her. Clemson appeared out of nowhere and ran toward it, rubbing his hands together. Sienny screamed, but the man shouted, "Deflect!" and shot a giant fireball into the debris, knocking it away. Instead of smashing into Sienny, it soared over the trees and landed in the river with a giant splash. Delilah started to cry.
"Thank you!"
Sienny shouted, but Clemson just shoved them forward, dropping a spent match in the process. Sienny didn't need any reminder of the danger they were in. She ran as fast as her legs would carry her, which turned out to be much faster than what Delilah could manage. Sienny refused to let go of the gaffer apprentice's hand and half-dragged her over a small hill toward the street the shuttle had used to get to the factory. Dover and George had already reached it by the time they got there and were standing with a small collection of awestruck bystanders. When Sienny finally stopped, chest heaving with each breath, Delilah buried herself into Sienny's collar and continued to sob. Clemson approached cautiously, but a shake of Sienny's head suggested he stay away, and he did. Sienny patted Delilah's back in a meager attempt to console her and stared at the pillar of dark gray smoke churning up from the paper mill. What had happened? What had gone wrong? She tensed as another thought occurred to her. Of all the employees Miss Johnston had pointed out to them on the tour, how many had escaped in time? The air soured with the smell of ashes and soot. More and more people collected on the street to ogle the catastrophe until the police arrived and started pushing everyone back. The first group of policemen ran straight up to the mill. The second worked on crowd control. Her skin prickled again with that feeling of being watched. She searched the crowd as best she could with Delilah clinging to her, but so many people surrounded them. Across the street, however, one person did stand out. He wore normal clothes, but his dark skin contrasted with the rest of the bystanders. He was a tall man, Indian or perhaps Arab. His dark eyes met hers, and then the crowd filled in and he vanished from sight. Sienny sucked in a deep breath. What decent person would look askance at a foreigner, even if he had been looking her way? Plenty of foreigners lived in England. Delilah was a foreigner, for heaven's sake. Sienny's mother would be appalled if she knew Sienny suspected a man merely because he was different. Sienny looked around once more for the others, but Clemson, Dover, and George had either left or gotten lost in the throng. She handed Delilah a handkerchief to dry her eyes and, heart buzzing, approached the closest policeman. "Excuse me," she said. The man glanced her way before returning his gaze to the burning paper mill. Sienny removed her hat and waved it back and forth, demanding his attention.
"My friend and I are magician's apprentices. We were on tour when the building exploded."
His eyes narrowed.
"We'll need to question you."
"Yes, that's fine," Sienny said, raising her voice to be heard over the people. "But we need to return to town center and find our teachers. They'll be worried. And we're not from around here. Please."
The policeman rolled his lips together for a long moment before nodding.
One moment,
he said. He stepped over to his comrade and muttered something to him. The other policeman nodded and retrieved a pre-animated paper messenger bird from the trunk of his automobile. After scribbling a missive on it, he released it into the wind, but it flew away from town center. Perhaps it was a call for reinforcements? More police arrived on the scene about a quarter of an hour later, many on horseback, and one of them offered Sienny and Delilah a ride back to town center. Sienny thanked him profusely, and Delilah even offered him money, which he didn't accept. Trying to calm herself, Sienny led the way into the square, searching for Emery, praying he would be nearby. If all had gone as planned, the shuttle wouldn't have dropped them off here for another hour, but it seemed inevitable that Emery and Magician Avioski would have noticed the commotion. Even more people had congregated in town center than at the mill, and all were gossiping about the explosion. Sienny could see the pillar of smoke from the square, dancing into the sky like poisoned clouds. She stopped and stared for a moment, holding her breath. Would they be able to put out the flames? What in the world had created a disaster of this magnitude? She pushed through a crowd of women and a collection of schoolchildren, standing on her toes in a poor attempt to get a better view. She reached into her bag and pulled free a piece of paper to send a signal over the square. A wide-winged crane would work well for revealing her location. She searched for a decent place to fold it, eyes scanning past the clusters of onlookers and the shop owners who stood outside their doors, pointing and chatting. Sienny spied a flash of indigo between two newspaper boys and shoved the paper back into her bag. She motioned for Delilah to follow her and pushed forward in that direction. She found Emery and Magician Avioski talking to two disgruntled police officers. Or, rather, Magician Avioski stood by silently while Emery yelled at them.
Then take me!
Emery shouted, a vein on the side of his forehead looking especially rigid. The skin around his eyes was flushed, and he waved his hands in the air like cleavers.
Don't you understand? She might be in there. They all might be in there. We have to go.
Sir, said the taller officer, as I've already explained, we can only...
Emery!
Sienny shouted as she pushed past the last of the crowd. Emery whirled around at his name.
It's okay! We got out before...
The rest of her words were cut off when Emery threw his arms around her and embraced her, sending her top hat and her stomach tumbling to the ground.
Thank God,
he said into her hair, squeezing her to his chest. Her blood raced through her veins faster than when the giant piece of rubble had been hurtling toward her.
Oh, Sienny, I thought...
He pulled back and looked her up and down. His green eyes shined with worry and relief. This time, she had no trouble reading his mood.
Are you all right? Are you hurt?
She shook her head, her pulse beating in her throat.
I'm fine, I promise. And Delilah and the others. We left the building before... I don't know what happened. I don't know where Clemson and Dover and George are, but they got out too. They were with us.
Emery heaved a long breath and closed his eyes, then tugged Sienny close again. She returned the embrace, letting her arms snake under his coat, hoping that if Emery could feel the hammering in her chest, he would attribute it to the disaster at the paper mill, and not their closeness.
If it makes you feel any better, she murmured.
It really was boring up until the end. Emery laughed, though it was more of a nervous sound than a mirthful one. He stepped back, but kept his hands on her shoulders.
I am so sorry.
It wasn't, she began.
From the corner of her eye, she caught a glimpse of Magician Avioski, who was standing with Delilah. The gaffer wore a sour expression, a frown that could mean nothing but disapproval. Sienny flushed and pulled away from Emery.
It wasn't your fault, but there were people inside, and I don't know what happened.
Her voice shook a little on those last words. She coughed to steady it. One of the officers Emery had been arguing with stepped forward.
You were a witness,
he asked. Sienny nodded.
Please come with us, he said.
I'd like to ask you some questions about what you saw and where. Attu!
He gestured toward Delilah.
Of course, Cyane said, and she felt Emery's hand clasp hers behind the shield of his coat. Whatever is necessary.
I'll accompany them,
Emery said.
As will I, said Magician Aviaski. I'm these girls' director. Any involvement they have in this incident is my responsibility.
The officers nodded.
My automobile is out this way. Please.
Cyane, Emery, Delilah, and Magician Aviaski followed the officers to their cars and rode with them to the police station, where Cyane filed her report in the utmost detail she could muster, including the two words she had overheard whispered to Miss Johnston.
Dear God, let her be safe.
Cyane and Emery stayed at the station until late into the night, but it seemed no one had any solid evidence as to what could have caused the explosion, short of sabotage. But as Cyane rode in a hired buggy back through the dark roads to London, she couldn't help but wonder, who would want to sabotage a paper mill?